Hey everyone, it's Cardiff and Stacey. This is The Indicator from Planet Money, and it is time for another listener mailbag episode when we answer your questions and highlight your critiques of the show. And today's episode is really packed, so we are going to get right to it.
We tackle a couple of questions on today's show. First of all, why does a dry cleaner in Maryland force its customers to pay when they drop off their laundry rather than just pay when they pick it up? And what is a better investment, real estate or the stock market? Plus, readers tell us about one place where the energy drink Rip It, which we bought at Family Dollar in a previous episode, is really popular. All that coming right up.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Intuit. Intuit's products, QuickBooks, TurboTax, and Mint, help you effortlessly manage your finances so you can live your life the way you want. Learn more at Intuit.com. Intuit, powering prosperity. Support also comes from Gainbridge. Gainbridge offers annuities designed for the digital age. Simplified products with guaranteed returns that you can buy direct. Learn more at gainbridge.life/NPR. Gainbridge is not available in all states.
Okay, our first question is from listener Navo.
Hello, The Indicator team. This is Navo Magnesi in College Park, Maryland. I noticed that at my local dry cleaners, it's a chain called Zips, customers pay prior to their clothes being dry cleaned. On the FAQ section of Zips website, they claim that customers are more likely to pick up their clothing quickly if they pay in advance. So I wanted to know, what is it about paying in advance that makes people faster at picking up their dry cleaning? Thanks for taking my question and keep on indicating. Or is it indicatoring?
Good question. We've never sorted this.
Indicating?
Indicator. I like indicatoring.
I like indicatoring too. Indicatoring officially.
Don't hate, indicate.
Oh, beautiful. That's a bumper sticker. Yeah. It's bumper sticker for someone else. So this dry cleaner, Zips, is a pretty big chain. It's in a few states, and it requires its customers to pay in advance. So to find out why, we went straight to the source.
Hi, I'm Drew Ricker. I'm the CEO and president of Zips Dry Cleaners in Greenbelt, Maryland.
Drew says that if a Zips customer picks up their clothes as soon as possible, that saves the company money.
If you've been to a dry cleaner or your garment care, you go into the store, and normally what you'll see are large clothing racks where clothing is being held. So, you know, to be able to hold that, hold clothes for a period of time, you've got to have a bigger building, you've got to have more equipment, you're going to have more labor. You have the cost associated with all that.
So that is pretty straightforward. When customers pick up their laundry quickly, Zips saves money on space and labor. And this means that the company can also charge less money to its customers. But Navo's question was, why is it more likely that people will pick up their clothes sooner if they have already paid in advance? Here's Drew again.
The thought is because you've already put the money out that, you know, you paid with your hard-earned money, you'll come pick it up as a result of that, because you made the payment.
Drew might be onto something here. So there is this concept in psychology and behavioral economics known as, quote, pain of paying. Not the pain of pain. The pain of paying. And we experience the process of paying kind of like this mental tax. And there are things that can sort of exacerbate the pain of paying and make it, you know, more painful.
Saw that coming.
Like, you know, for instance, when we pay in cash and we have to physically hand over money, that is a lot more painful than if you use a credit card and there's just a swipe and the transaction is almost invisible.
And behavioral economists believe that timing matters too. So, for example, if you pay for a big vacation way in advance, you will probably enjoy the vacation more than if you pay at the end of the vacation. Because if you know you're going to pay at the end, then the eventual pain of that payment might be in the back of your head the whole time. Instead, you should just force yourself to experience the pain of paying as soon as possible.
The pain of pain. And so something like this might be happening at Zips. By paying up front, customers will not have a psychological reason to avoid the pain of pain when they pick up their clothes. And that might also leave the customer, you know, feeling better about the service itself when they leave with their clothes and they didn't have to hand any money over.
Yeah, so Zips might be getting kind of a twofer on this one. It saves money on storage costs, and its customers are left with that satisfied feeling.
Also, they don't have, like, those clothes that people leave there forever when you're like, you know, I didn't like that blazer that much anyway. Never mind.
They end up giving you somebody else's clothes. Yeah.
Our next question comes from listener Rachel and her husband.
We're hoping you could help us get to the bottom of a debate we've been having. Long term, is it better to invest in the stock market or in real estate properties? My husband's dad is a wealth manager, while my mom is a real estate agent, so we often get conflicting points of views. We're at the point where we're saving enough money to put into one of the two. We have a little in both already, but aren't sure what to keep doing. Any clarity would be amazing. Thanks so much. You guys rock.
Thanks,
Rachel, for injecting us into your family drama.
The Indicator at Thanksgiving. So, okay, Rachel, here we go. Real estate or housing versus the stock market? So this is a question that comes up all the time in finance. And, you know, here at The Indicator, we really try not to give specific investment advice, mostly because we're just not
qualified.
That's the best for everyone. We don't know what we're doing. But we can offer a little bit of context.
Yeah, three economists have just released a new working paper about the long-term returns on different asset classes, things like stocks and housing. And they've been researching this topic for a while. What they did was to study the long-term returns on stocks and housing both around the world and in the United States, going all the way back to the late 1800s.
And what these economists found was that throughout the whole world, equities and housing returned just about the same amount every year, a little less than 7% after adjusting for inflation.
But in the U.S., the story is a little different. U.S. equities over the long term have returned about 8.5% a year. Housing has returned about 6%. But here's the thing. Throughout the years, equities have fluctuated. They've gone up and down more than housing has fluctuated. In other words, according to this paper, equities have been riskier. So you get a higher return, but you're taking more risk to get that return.
If there is one takeaway from the report, the thing that economists themselves were the most surprised by, it's that housing as an investment has historically been better than they had assumed. But that said, there are dozens of caveats that we would have to add to this conclusion.
Yeah, for example, there is a difference between buying a house for you to live in versus buying a bunch of rental properties that you might have to manage yourself or maybe pay somebody else to manage. Plus, there are the transaction costs of buying and selling stocks versus those of buying and selling homes.
But maybe the biggest caveat of all is that, you know, just because you got a certain return from an asset in the past does not mean you're going to get that same return in the future. And of course, there are so many other caveats. So, Rachel, if you or other listeners are interested in reading this paper, we will link to it on our website. That is npr.org/money, along with some other reading material on the topic. And you can take this to Thanksgiving.
Just don't tell them where you found it.
Let's bring some PowerPoint presentations into this discussion.
Leave us out of it.
Bring us in. Bring us in. Don't fear the Thanksgiving table, Cardiff.
And then finally, we received a lot of feedback, and I mean a lot of feedback, about a recent episode because of something I said about the energy drink Rip It, which Stacy had bought at Family Dollar for a story that we did about dollar stores.
It was a dollar.
Yeah. The can of Rip It had a picture of an American flag and a U.S. soldier on it, and I commented that it seemed like a very patriotic drink, but that I had never heard of it. Well, believe me, listeners set me straight, because Rip Its have actually been hugely popular within the U.S. military, and I had no idea.
Yes, everybody ripped into poor Cardiff.
Whoa.
But it turns out that the company that makes Rip It, it's called the National Beverage Corporation, and it had a deal with the Defense Department to provide military members with Rip It drinks throughout the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And apparently, the soldiers drank a lot of it. And some would even have chugging contests to see how much they could drink within, you know, like a small time frame, like an hour.
So my bad, everybody. I just didn't know.
I hadn't heard of it either. I'd never had a Rip It.
But a sincere thanks for writing in to let us know about it, especially to the veterans and to the current members of our military. Thank you all for your service. And we, by the way, still have that can of Rip It.
Yes, so we do.
Stacy and I are going to try it right now just to make amends.
I'm interested in this.
We're definitely not going to chug it, though. Here it comes.
Speak for yourself. Okay. Thoughts before I try it?
It's very sweet.
It's red.
It tastes like it has a lot of sugar in it.
Okay, here
we
go.
It tastes like, I'm not taking any more sips. It's pretty intense.
Oh!
Yeah. It's very sweet.
You know what? It reminds me of Capri Sun. Doesn't it remind you of Capri Sun?
A little bit.
Did you ever have Capri Sun?
But carbonated? Yeah.
Yeah, carbonated Capri Sun.
I'm just looking at the thing. There's 100 calories in half a can and 26 grams of sugars.
It's pretty delicious. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Constanza Gallardo, edited by Patty Hirsch, our intern is Willa Rubin, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.